We're talking with Steele Smith here. And Steele, you and your wife and two other people are facing 10 years right now in federal prison for cultivating cannabis under sanction of California state law. And your trial is going...
And federal law.
And federal law. And you, that's a really good point. And you, your trial is scheduled for March 22nd?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, the significance of your case, which distinguishes your case from other cases, is that it's the first time in history, in U.S. history, that a federal judge is allowing a medical defense based upon California's state law.
Yes, sir.
Now, for those who are not familiar with your case, can you kind of go over like the sequence of events which is now leading up to this March 22nd trial?
Sure. Well, it started with my getting diagnosed with a rare illness and losing my business that I had at the time. And my wife and I sought safe access for ourselves under California medical marijuana laws. And we set up our own little collective back in 2005. And by November of 2007, we were raided by the DEA for cultivation of medical marijuana and subsequently charged with cultivation of over 3,000 plants, facing a 10-year mandatory minimum. Back in 2005, when we started this collective, we were the second in Orange County, and the collective attracted a lot of patients really quickly. So we were indicted, and we had all of our corporation was in order, and our business license, and financial records, and all that. And so that's why we were not charged with distribution or sales or money laundering or anything like that, because we did have our paperwork organized. So the government just charged us with cultivation and conspiracy to cultivate. That was back in November of 2007.
And can you explain the difference between, maybe you'd have more knowledge than I would about this, like the difference between a collective, let's say, and a dispensary?
Well, all collectives or dispensaries need to be organized legally as collectives. A dispensary is really kind of a street term that people use to refer to any storefront that sells marijuana retail, with a storefront. That's kind of a term that people use to refer to a collective. But dispensary is not necessarily a legal term.
Oh, okay. And so, like, if I was to set up a collective under California state law, what would I do to go about setting that up?
Well, you'd need to be organized as a either an S corp, C corp, LLC, or California nonprofit is the best form, and then you have to be organized as an association or one of the other five legal entities. And I recommend for people to talk with their lawyers and figure out what entity would work best for their business model. And that's something that, in order to stay out of trouble, you really need to work at that level to dot those I's and cross those T's.
So talk about how you use cannabis and why you really grow it. What was your original inspiration for doing this?
Well, I was diagnosed with Zollinger-Ellison, which is multiple duodenal ulcers versus stomach ulcers. So they're very invasive and very painful and mess up my diet. So I need the medical marijuana to create sation and to abate nausea and to kind of create the munchies so that I have that feeling of being able to keep food down. So it's very important for me to just maintain my diet. I'm already very thin, and it's hard for me to keep weight on. So I use the medical marijuana to keep food down. It's really an important thing for me personally. and abate pain as well. Back when I was first diagnosed, they put me on opiate pain medication, and I got addicted to it, and it was a terrible thing, and it was a long road getting myself off. So I would never go back to that, and nothing else works other than the medical marijuana. So for me, I'm a real believer.
So as far as you're concerned, you have always been operating legally under sanction of state law and federal law as well. Can you explain your reasoning behind the legality of your actions under federal law?
That we were operating legally under the 10th Amendment, which says that states have the right to establish their own laws and for the people to be able to operate freely under those laws without fear of reprisal under the federal government. So I was organized under Prop 215 laws, specifically the Jerry Brown AG guidelines of 2005. And for the feds to step into the state and to say, no, that's wrong, you can't do that, when I was under the belief that my state laws were protecting me, that's that kind of reprisal is just wrong. Nobody should fear in their state operating under state law for the feds on any level. So this is a political issue that's morally and ethically wrong. That's why our Constitution allowed for separate state constitutions along with federal law, because our Constitution recognized that people, as we spread throughout the country and made these beautiful, great 50 states, that people congregate in different parts of the country with different morals and values and ethics, and it's up to those people to establish their local rules within their state. The states are made up of people who are like-minded. So that's just wrong for people in California to agree on one thing and then people in basically Washington, D.C. across the country to say, no, that's wrong, you can't do that. Who are they? Yeah, they're the feds, but that's not their job. You know, we're supposed to have autonomy in individual states. So.
And why do you think, in thinking about your past history with the local county governments, why do you think the DEA raided your home?
Because back in 2005, there were very few other collectives. As far as I know, there was only one other collective in North Orange County. Also, I had a previous incident in city of Placentia where I had 18 mother plants in my garage, and they were just in transition from one grow to another. And during that incident, we left the garage open, and the police saw the plants in the garage and called the rest of their agency in from the city and proceeded to violate our rights from about 7 p.m. till 1 a.m., they asked us for all of our paper and how we were organized and patient records and just all that stuff. And I showed them everything, and they felt like they were on the fence with that particular situation, that they couldn't find anything that was egregious or anything that was glaringly wrong. So they, by 1 a.m., got the district attorney out of bed on the phone and said, hey, we're in this house, and there's plants, but the guy's claiming to be a caregiver, and he's showing me a bunch of paper with a corporation and a collective named C3, and we're confused. You know, he's showing what looks like a collective, but we don't know what one looks like because they hadn't seen any others. So the district attorney said, fine, just take everything and leave. Don't charge them, don't arrest them, don't do anything, just take everything. And they did that. So I sued the city of Placentia for violation of my civil rights, for the theft of all of my material. And, you know, they wouldn't give it back. So I sued the city, and I was beating the city. And back in 2005, when this case was going on, actually it was 2006 by then, there was another case in the city of Garden Grove. Everybody's familiar with the Felix Kah case. Well, Felix Kah, you know, won that case against the city of Garden Grove, and while the Kah case was going on in court, my case was going on at the same time, my civil case. Well, Felix Kah was beating the city of Garden Grove and got a huge judgment against them. So the city attorney for the city of Placentia, in my case, figured he'd be smart, which, looking back on it, was a stupid move. But at the time, he thought he was being smart, and he called the DEA. And he said, hey, there's a grow in my city. Come get him. And they did. And so when the DEA arrested and indicted us, we lost what's called legal standing in the state court to sue the city of Placentia. So by the city attorney elevating our case to the DEA, it made our standing go away, which is your legal right to sue in the civil court. District attorney screwed up is the judge in that civil case dismissed the case without prejudice, which means I get to go back to my civil case if and when I beat my federal case or if my federal case is ever dismissed. So my standing in my civil case is preserved by the civil judge. You see, the city attorney for Placentia should have realized that his best move probably would have been to continue to adjudicate the case. And yeah, they might have gotten a judgment against him, but it wouldn't have been very much. It might have been a few hundred thousand dollars. And yeah, it would have stung a little bit to the city, but they would have been able to pay it. But when they had elevated my case to the feds, I was locked up for 10 months. My wife was locked up for 3 months. We lost 2 houses. We lost 2 cars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So my damages now are far greater than they were. The city of Placentia never should have elevated this. So it's really kind of an unusual and unique situation that we find ourselves in.
And so if your case on a federal level gets dismissed, do you think you're going to be reasserting your civil case under state law?
Conrad, not only am I going to be reasserting my rights in that case, the attorney that I had on the case in the beginning was a fairly powerful Newport Beach firm. At the end of the day, they were only an Orange County firm. The new firm that I have, I'm not going to say who it is, but the new firm that I have is a very major corporate, we've got offices all over the world. And when they sue, they sue major entities like cities or governments or corporations. And that's who I have attracted to handle my case, when my standing comes back. So I can't talk in any more detail about that. And I need to, make sure that I have respect for my adversaries at all times.
Yeah. And so what kind of precedents of law are you dealing with in federal court? You did mention the 10th Amendment. What other principles do you think your federal case is really about? What kind of law are you trying to assert?
That's a great question. And if anybody wants, I'll explain that real quick. I just wanted to interject that if anybody wants to view the motions that have been filed in my case, they're on our website at w.steelscase.org. That's w.steelescase.org. And our attorneys have filed 4 motions. Actually, 3 of them have already been filed. The 4th one's going to be filed here in the next month or so. 2 of the 3 motions that were filed are 9th and 10th Amendment motions. They are states' rights motions. They're asking the federal government to affirm states' rights. The 3rd motion is a habeas corpus motion for invalidate the search warrant. And the 4th one that we're working on is a motion to question the rule of law. It's called error of law. And I can't really get into the specifics of that again because that's some tactical information on our side. But once the motion's filed, it'll be posted on our website, and I ask your listeners to please, bookmark our site and share it with friends.
Yes, most definitely. And, I guess just what would you like to say, to other patients out there? Because obviously, it's a constant struggle, a constant fight for everyone in this movement. What can they do to help, and what do you think your case presents for them to learn from?
Can I step sideways and answer this question in an interesting way?
Go for it, please.
This case right now, I think for the movement, for the patients, I think over time, honestly, is going to become less important. And to answer your question of what can patients do, I'm going to say something that I don't think many people have said yet, and that's to support the other states. Right now, we have 15 states that have medical marijuana laws. We have an election coming up in 2012. We have 20 more states with medical marijuana laws on their ballot for 2012. If we support those other 20 states, all we need is half of them to win. When half of those 20 states pass medical marijuana laws, the 15 states that are currently have laws now become 26. That's over half the states. That means the medical marijuana laws fall. The laws, you know, when half the states have laws, more than half, it's a congressional act that the laws are valid for all the states. So by all rights, By all rights, marijuana prohibition could be in its last year right now. So there's a lot of things that people can do locally. There's a lot of things people can do on the state level. But I'm going to encourage people to reach out to their other states and support them insofar as information, answering questions, sharing vendor contacts, doing all the things that states can do to establish interstate commerce. I'd like to see people start doing that now because, like I said, I believe we are in our last year of prohibition. So I don't think that, our focus in years past has been to get laws passed state to state one by one by one until we can get the wall to fall, so to speak. But because right now we're at 15 states with 20 more on the ballot, technically, theoretically, the wall can fall next year. So I'd like to see some pushing from our state into the other states to help tilt those votes.
And so as the trial date is coming closer for your case, what is the most ideal outcome that you can expect? And what's the worst outcome that you can expect as well?
Well, the most ideal outcome would be that I go to trial and the jury acquits us. That would be the most ideal outcome. My wife and I are actually kind of looking forward to that. We kind of doubt that's going to happen. The next most ideal option would be obviously a dismissal, an outright dismissal. The worst thing that could happen would be go to trial and losing, which is why my wife and I are so willing to go do this, because we just don't see that happening. Our case is so clean. We don't have any other charges. The government can't dirty our image by saying that they found a gun on us or any other drugs or that we were evading taxes or anything like that. There's nothing the government can say about us to make us look like bad citizens or bad people. So we believe from a sheer battle standpoint in front of a jury, remember these jurors are still jurors of our peers. They're still from California. They still live in a medical marijuana state. They still see the same law news that everybody else sees. So in that jury of 12 jurors, I only need one. We only need one to say no. You know, these guys were operating legally under state law. They didn't do anything else wrong, and I am not going to convict these people for 10 years. Which, remember, that's what they're asking for at the end of the day is 10 years. This is not a 1 year or 5 year sentence. This is 10 years. So I think that we only need one juror to have a moral issue with sending us away for 10 years simply because we were compliant under state law, but there was a dichotomy between state and federal law. That's not my fault. That's not my problem that there's a dichotomy. That's between the state and the Fed to work out. So for me to be take the brunt of that fight it's ethically and morally wrong, and I'm willing to go to the jury knowing that there's going to be one person on that jury that'll agree with me.
So, you know, beyond all the legal semantics and technicalities and all that, like, what I see your case, if it can't set a legal precedent for other people to use, then at the very least, it sets a conscientious precedent, so
right.
to say.
And Conrad, here's another thing to keep in mind, is there's the two trade associations now that are in Southern California. There's GLACA, which is the Greater Los Angeles Caregivers Alliance, it's the trade association for collectives and caregivers in L.A. And then in Orange County, I'm president of GOCA, which is Greater Orange County Caregivers Alliance. So we have a website, which is caregiversalliance-oc.org, and on there is posted all of the protocols and rules and regulations for collectives in Orange County. These were established by the voting members of the organization. In order to be a member of the organization, you have to be vetted by the organization. You have to submit your corporation, your business license, taxpayer ID number, articles, and workman's comp documentation. Once those documents are submitted and we vet them with the government to make sure that they're valid, you're then eligible to be a member, and membership is free upon successful vetting. Currently in Orange County, we have 6 collective members. Those members are posted on the website. Patients are welcome to visit any of those shops. They're beautiful, clean shops that a patient can know for fact is legally owned and operated. As the president of GOCA, I've been sharing that information with city officials to make them aware of the presence of the trade association, such that if they want to talk about reciprocity or establishing rules and regulations for their city, they can engage with the trade association. We feel that most city officials don't want to deal with individual collective owners and operators, because that's all they are, is a collective owner whose interests are in his collective, not in the rules and regulations at a greater level for the city. So that's why a trade association has been established, to kind of be a third-party entity to represent both sides of the field, the collective owners and the city officials. So this level of government is starting to grow. Trade associations are starting to grow. Reciprocity is being established. And those collectives that are engaged in that mix are of sorts high-hanging fruit. If the government's going to look for a collective to raid, they go for the low-hanging fruit. The low-hanging fruit are those shops who are not accredited, aren't affiliated with trade associations, don't want to share their corporate information, and kind of want to hide. It's pretty obvious that way when you see those that step forward and those that don't want to. So those that don't want to kind of become low-hanging fruit. They become easy pickings for police raids. So this sort of separation is already taking place in Southern California.
And so, you know, these laws that exist around cannabis are, I mean, obviously unjust on many different levels. You know, what is your opinion as to why these laws even exist in the first place?
Oh, that's a great question, Conrad. You know, marijuana prohibition is a similar knee-jerk reaction back in the 20s to alcohol. Back then, we politically at the same time had an issue with opium. Heroin was sold through the Sears catalog. The Bayer company bottled heroin. Opiates were a real problem, and the government needed to regulate it, and they did. At that time, Eli Lilly kind of stood up as a representative of the pharmaceutical industry and said, I want to standardize opiates, I want to put it into a pill, and I want to regulate it. So that process was laid down. At about the same time, in the southern part of the country, we've got our jazz rooms in the deep south in Louisiana, and you've got these uptight northern Caucasian people upset about the ethnic jazz musicians down south drinking and smoking their marijuana, and in that discourse there's a real separation societally. The people up north just kind of started to demonize those people down south and create images about them that were wrong, that marijuana, you know, makes you do devilish things or stupid things or whatever. And it was just, it was erroneous. It was salacious. It appealed to people's fears. And so that in that knee-jerk reaction came laws against marijuana. Also, at the same time, are pressures in the north by the large corporations who are the timber industry, Weyerhaeuser and 3M, a Mississippi Mining and Machining Company that made the blades and equipment that cut the timber for the timber industry. And the timber industry is competing with the hemp industry for oil and thread and rope. So their lobbyists in the government simply lobbied for marijuana to be made illegal using those salacious arguments to fuel the public fervor. They didn't say to the public, hey, we want to compete with, you know, hemp and wood. They simply said, marijuana is bad, it's a drug, and it's going to cause a societal problem. So they created that fear, totally not talking about hemp's benefit. So the industry was able to use the fears and get rid of marijuana through legalization, through, you know, congressional acts. And that was wrong. It was wrong the way alcohol did it. But alcohol went underground up north. It went into speakeasies and, you know, backroom bars, and the mafia popped up. So societally up north, we said no. You know, we're not going to tolerate marijuana, alcohol prohibition, but marijuana didn't have a place in the society up north, so there was no backlash to that knee-jerk reaction. So marijuana really went underground until about the 60s, when the hippie generation kind of found it again. And up through the 70s, the hippie generation really kind of hit its head with Woodstock in New York, and then the Summer of Love in 1968 in California. And Ronald Reagan was just, you know, second-term governor in California, and he's making ovations for presidency. Well, you got all this going on in the country, and you got all these hippies on both sides of the country all over the news, and our older generation was feeling that this younger generation is really screwing up, that our society's taking a hard left turn. So Reagan, on his way into office, right on the heels of, I guess it was Ford and Nixon, took their kind of bubblings and rumblings about these drugs and finally made them illegal, established the DEA and established drug laws, very draconian drug laws. And we went through the 80s and the 90s where now half of our society is locked up. People who are, you know, honest, hardworking citizens who maybe had a roach in their ashtray or, you know, a dime bag in their pocket are now doing time and lost their families and their jobs and their lives are destroyed. They're now no longer productive citizens because they have a record over pot. So groups like Normal through those times have realized that this is wrong and they've been lobbying, and ACES stepped up in about 2002, and that's about when I got into the business, 2004, 2005, with my wife, and here we are.
Now, there's a lot of people that don't understand the difference between state and federal law. Now, under state law, you have the right to present a medical defense, but not under federal law. Now, can you explain the significance of that and how your case is significant to that distinction?
Another great question, Conrad. And at the end of the day, the people need to know that the feds will... It's a lie of omission, okay? To indict a person in a medical marijuana state and put them in federal court stating that they are doing what they're doing illegally is wrong. Those indicted persons did everything they could to follow the state law, and that takes a lot of work and effort. For the feds to come in and say, no, that's all wrong, your time was wasted, your intent was wrong, and you're a criminal, is just ethically and morally out of the park. It's a needle skipping on the record. So that's what people need to recognize, is that our case is poised to flush out this issue. If any other caregivers want to get into the business and think that they are not going to have any reprisal or fear of reprisal from the federal government, they're sadly mistaken. And unless my case is adjudicated, any future caregiver is going to be, or actually any existing caregiver is going to continue to be subject to federal raid. So that's why I've been, you know, banging my stick for so long, banging on my door. I need people to hear this, and I need people to speak up and support this case so that it'll protect them as well. You know, this case is a wedge that can stop future raids in California. I think that's another reason why we haven't gone to trial yet, because the government knows this. If I go to trial and I win, any future caregiver who's indicted by the federal government can use my case as a defense and say, no, I was operating legally under state law. You big feds can't come in and indict me. And the feds don't want to hand that law to the citizens of this state. So they're better off to just let my case sit out there, unadjudicated, unattended to, just indefinitely.
And the federal government, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've actually offered you settlements in your federal case. Can you explain that?
I'm sorry, can you ask that again?
Oh, the federal government has offered you like settlements. Can you you know what I mean? Can you
settlements in the terms of offer to settle the case, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the you know, we've been facing a 10-year mandatory minimum all along. The first offer was 5-year, and of course we said no way. The next offer was 1 year, and I already have 10 months locked up. My wife has 3. There's no way I'm going to agree to that and go back and do 2 months and let my wife go do the balance of hers. There's just no way that's going to happen. Furthermore, I don't want a felony on my record. So we denied that offer. The current offer on the table, and I want to make clear that this is not a formal offer. This offer is not in writing. This offer is purely discussion between the government and my attorneys as to a complete dismissal with accepting a felony. And we're not even willing to do that. The felony on our record at the end of the day wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. What would be the worst thing in the world would be giving up the fight that we have, giving up the ability to create this wedge to protect future caregivers in the state. That's the bigger issue. If we were to just accept that final offer, yeah, my wife and I could sleep better at night and we could not have to worry about this. This big cloud would go away. We wouldn't have to call pretrial services every week. We wouldn't have to do what we have to do. But we do it because it's a moral, it's an ethical fight. It's greater than us. It's a position that we've been put in to kind of stop federal raids. If they can't get us, and I think they raided some shops in West Hollywood the other day, and you know, who knows what's up with those shops, but those people are going to face the same thing that we did. And if their shops were duly organized, then they should be able to stand their ground like we did. If they weren't, then they're going to have to take a deal or whatever in order to minimize their downside, you know, minimize their losses.
Yeah. What kind of media coverage have you gotten on your case so far?
Well, I'm really disappointed about that. You know, Conrad, it's been guys like yourself who have radio programs here locally and have are involved in the cause who have been the greatest. The state, countywide and statewide news bureaus have really they haven't covered this at all. Even the national news hasn't covered this. Charlie Lynch's case back in a few years ago up in Morro Bay. He was on Larry King Live. He got tons of national press. And the only reason he got that was because his case had the blessing of the city of Morro Bay and the police of the city of Morro Bay, and then the feds came in and got him. So, you know, that was cool that he had the blessing and everything, but he still went down because he wasn't duly organized. I almost feel like the national news outlets don't want to talk about our case because it is too good. When the national news bureaus do put news out there, it's always this, this, and that, but then there's this. You know, there's always a but. You know, they're okay, but. And, you know, there's no but in our case. So I kind of wonder, you know, what's going on? Do they not want to show a matter that's just, you know, really clean and inks our position with regard to legalization and decriminalization 100%, or would the national news really prefer that this remain illegal and remain criminalized? I don't know. I'm frustrated by that one, Conrad.
And so, you know, there's a an initiative. Well, first I want to ask you, do you think they're going to postpone your trial any more than they already have?
Well, it's March tw the 22nd of this month is coming up, and I've heard some rumblings through the attorneys of our co-defendants that there will be another postponement. So I don't know for sure today, but by the end of this week, I will know.
All right. And
And we'll let you know.
awesome. And I'll let my listeners know for sure. And
Thank you.
I guess I have kind of one last question before you can say whatever you want to say. But there's an initiative coming up in 2012, the Jack Herrera Initiative. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it presents a outright challenge to federal law, any law which would contradict it. And it basically does that under the authority of the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. Do you think that would help your case,
Oh,
if
absolutely, Conrad. You know, any effort in that arena is helpful. Right now, we have so little and so few people across the country who are really capable of writing good arguments and presenting good arguments to the right people that we need every bit of work we can get. And that Jack Herrera bill is just brilliant.
And I want to give you as much time as you want to give the address of the court and give out your website again and anything else you'd like to say to my listeners here before we end.
Well, the main thing would be to please just stay tuned at steelscase.org. We have a calendar of events on the front page that shows the history of this case. We have a media page with all the press to date. There's also a media kit. If any media outlets need a press release, there's a PDF posted. Also, there's a legal page where motions are posted and legal process is there, as well as the evidence in our case. Anybody can open that. They're all PDFs, and that's located at w.steelscase.org. Please just watch the court dates, show up to the rallies, and that's the main thing, is show up to the rallies.
And where and when is the rally set for right now?
March 22nd, 8 a.m., Ronald Reagan Federal Courthouse, 4th Street in Santa Ana, California.
And would it help if people brought like signs?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Please dress, I don't want to even say business casual, but please look civilized and orderly. If media is there, we don't want the media to be able to spin our event as a bunch of stoners. You know, we want to look like regular citizens who are fighting for a right like anyone else.
Right on. And again, your website is steelscase.org. That's STEELESCASE.org. I want to thank you so much for being here on Guerrilla Radio again. And it's really an honor, and I hope you keep on keeping on. And thank
you're
you.
You're awesome, Conrad.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I will talk to you later.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
And Teresa says hi, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
All right. Right on.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.